So today I'm here at the for the last weekend of the Melbourne Writers Festival, and I'm meeting with Tony Ayres. Tony is a showrunner, writer, director, and founding member of Matchbox Pictures. Thanks, Tony, for taking the time to talk to us at Geelong Community Radio.
Hi, John.
Now, well, you're here for a session today called Barracuda, taking the story from page to screen, which is sort of very much about turning books into films or TV miniseries, and we'll talk to you about that. But I'd like to talk to you too about your career, and perhaps just say something to our listeners about your very extensive and very varied career. Now, you've been the executive producer of Glitch, Family Law, Wanted and Nowhere Boys, and recently I caught up with your feature film Cut Snake, which I've been looking forward to seeing and finally caught up with. And you're also the showrunner and director, and I might ask a bit later about showrunner too, what a showrunner does, but the showrunner and director in The Slap, and that won a number of awards and was nominated for a BAFTA and an International Emmy. Your home song Stories in 2007, which I first saw and which sparked my interest in your career, premiered in Berlin and won 23 Australian and international awards, including 8 AFI awards. And your first feature, you're smiling, your first feature, Walking on Water, won a Teddy Award and 5 AFI awards. So it's a very extensive and very varied career. With such a sort of an incredible career, I was wondering, does it sort of get planned ahead, or how does it sort of happen? Is it a matter of opportunities and interests, and making the most of the opportunities that arise? How does it sort of happen, Karina, like that, when you look back on it?
It is a little bit by accident and opportunity, I think. Like, I started out at film school, and I was trained as a TV writer predominantly, and my early career was writing TV, and then an opportunity came for me to direct a documentary, which then led to another documentary. I had no training in directing or documentaries. And somehow the fusion of writing and documentary kind of led me to my first feature film. And people had liked, I'd made a 1-hour documentary called Sadness, which was a very stylized piece about William Yang.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Beautiful monologue that he did about friends of his who died, and I sort of reshaped it and put pictures to it, and it did very well.
Mm.
And that sort of, you know, one thing kind of weirdly enough leads you to another, and you sort of steer the ship a little bit, you know. But basically, you know, it's where the elements take you sometimes. Yeah.
So you say steer the ship. So how does that steering the ship happen too?
For me, I have been pretty lucky in that I. I'm very much an ideas person, and I generate ideas, and I think of things I want to do, and then I sort of, you know, put them out into the world, and I've had a pretty good strike rate in terms of, you know, things that I wanted to do actually happening, and I mean, not everything you want to do happens, but that could be a good thing, really. You know, a lot of things have happened, and so I guess that's what I mean by steering my career.
Your career, I'll probably ask you a bit later about your own style, and you know, the variations in the style, really, it sort of, you know, changes, sort of seems to from time to time. Perhaps just ask about the film Cut Snake, you know, which is very hard to classify, too, really. I suppose it's been described as a love triangle, but you know, with very unexpected sort of twists and turns. It has been sort of described, I think somewhere it was described as a sweaty melodrama.
Yeah.
Quite a few people sort of brought in that sort of melodramatic sort of aspect. And I wonder, was that sort of unfair, or was that something that you set out to sort of integrate? Is that something that developed, or is that somebody else looking at what you do and calling it melodramatic?
I try to think of it as melodrama as a genre rather than melodrama as the criticism.
Okay.
It is, you know, in some ways it has melodramatic elements in it, in that, you know, it's kind of, it's borderline for me, because it seems like credible drama, but that it goes into big sort of drama as the stakes rise. It's actually, you know, like in many ways, it's a chamber piece. It's, for me, it was the fusion of making a thriller, which I'd never done before, and trying to make a thriller, and also it being a love triangle. It's a fusion of those two things, and that was the thing that interested me most in making it.
Well, somewhere I think you say that it's drawing too long a bow to say that Home Song Stories and Cut Snake deal with issues of identity, but there's certainly some, both about sort of people trying to deal with aspects of the past. Is that sort of a theme that interests you particularly?
I think the two recurring themes in my work are around identity and around racial identity, sexual identity. I think that there is a kind of pretty consistent jostling of the two themes in, you know, that goes all the way back to the beginning of what I've done. And, you know, Barracuda is another example of a piece that talks about both racial identity and sexual identity. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that identity is a important part of, you know, the things that I consider.
Mm. So do you think that sort of, those sort of themes are sort of becoming more apparent in Australian cinema? You know, those non-mainstream, which I suppose is unfair to say non-mainstream themes, becoming more mainstream?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like there are two different sort of things that are happening at the moment. I think in cinema, anyway, and that I think they're happening concurrently in cinema. I think we are in a more conservative time. I think that it's harder and harder for films, for little films like Cut Snake, to cut through to a broader audience.
Mm.
I think, and films are, you know, I know that in trying to put a film together, you know, the wisdom of the moment is that you either go for bigger budgets with movie stars, or you go for smaller, more boutique things, and that middle ground, which was actually the predominant Australian cinema landscape, is sort of really struggling at the moment.
Mm.
So, you know, that's a sort of polarisation. I think, weirdly enough, the inverse of that is happening in television. I think that television is becoming more diverse, more dangerous in a way.
I was going to ask you about that. It seemed like more opportunities for diverse voices and more sort of pay TV outlets in America particularly, you know, more and more demand for different sorts of stories.
I think it's everyone talks about this being the period of peak TV, that we're in this kind of, you know, like, that there's so much product at the moment and there are so many avenues, but there's also so much, that only happens because there's so much appetite to watch these things. Mm. And, you know, I think that
so
is
a good thing.
Yeah.
Provides more opportunity.
For me, it's a good thing because I work in TV.
Which sort of just brings me to your own style. I think you said somewhere that you've been a bit of a butterfly with ranges of interests and tastes, that just as someone's identity is diverse, so your style has been diverse too. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you could probably draw some threads through it, but you know, I don't think you really even need to, because it is just about, you know, everyone has a range of tastes.
Mm.
And I've been fortunate enough to be able to work across a whole range of different things, from comedy to more serious drama to even, you know, some genre sort of stuff.
Mm.
And all of those things are things that I really love. So.
Mm-hmm. So sort of coming to today's sort of symposium on Barracuda and taking the story from page to screen, I think you've also said somewhere that a drama has to have a particular type of structure. So I sort of understand from what I've read that you've said that there's no sort of A, B, C in terms of turning a book into a film or a TV miniseries, that each one sort of dictates its own sort of process. So can you say something about the process, though, how it happens? And perhaps some books are just not able to be turned into TV miniseries or films?
I think that when I read Barracuda, I mean, I loved the book, and I had a very clear idea of how I would do it.
Mm.
And I pitched it to Christos, and he really liked it.
Mm.
And I sort of said I didn't want to do the whole book. I didn't want to, you know, because the book covers 20 years.
Yeah,
and it's a huge life, and there's lots of different stories in it. And, you know, and it does what books can do, which means it can go all over the place.
Mm.
And I was more, I guess I was more interested in, I certainly loved the themes of the book, but I felt that everything that Christos was talking about, or a lot of the things that Christos was talking about, could be reduced to a 4-year period, yes, which would be the kind of the most dramatic part of the book for me, which is the story of Danny Kelly, the racer, the swimmer. So I pitched to him, not you know, because if I was going to do the whole book, it would be like an 8-parter or something like that. And I sort of pitched to him this idea of, let's just make a 4-part miniseries. It's kind of like a series of sports movies. And, you know, like, it's like when the writers, Linda Chaco and Blake Ashford and my co-producer, Amanda Higgs, and I were in the room, plotting room, we just talked about it in terms of Rocky 1, 2, 3, and 4. Yeah, and there was something really appealing about that, because, you know, because the book is all about winning, you know, and how important winning is.
So is it something, somehow sort of cutting through to the spirit of the book, or the the impact of the book, and
absolutely
distilling it down into a miniseries?
Yeah, it's just finding a dramatic form for it that that isn't the form of the book, the novel, but still talks about the things that the novel talks about. Yeah. And I, you know, for me, the most gratifying part of the process was that when Christos saw the complete miniseries, he sort of said, well, you know, he felt that we had captured the book.
So was your approach to The Slap a different sort of approach? Because it's a different book, or was it similar because it's the same author?
It was a completely different approach. Yeah. When I read The Slap, it was pretty much, oh, you know, this is how you tell this story. You just tell it as it is. I mean, we made some, you know, changes, but there were more subtle changes in what we did from the book to the screen version. Barracuda is a more radical kind of surgery. But you know, the beauty of working with someone like Christos is that he just says at the beginning of the process, the novel is my medium, and the adaptation is your medium, so do what you need to do. And he gives it its license, and he came into the writer's room, we pitched him ideas, and he you know, he just gave us license to take those ideas further, and that was really great.
I think you say somewhere too that a book is not a screenplay, so there's a big jump, I guess, between, you know, the book and how it's going to end up, you know, on the screen.
You still have to have a vision of what the thing is, you know, that's different from what a book is.
I think I read somewhere that you did have a look at to the book Holding the Man, but you'd let that go, or you couldn't see a way around making it into a...
It was much earlier in my career, and I was a close friend of Tim Connor Graves, the author, and I actually read the first manuscript of Holding the Man 2 nights before he died. He sort of printed it out, and I read it overnight, and I sort of felt so responsible, and I felt so like, you know, that I had to honour this this novel, that I was too literal.
Too close.
Way too literal. So I think the first draft when I wrote this movie was 240 pages long. And I basically, you know, I had never adapted anything before, and it was almost like everything you could do wrong, I did. And at the end of it, I wrestled with it for a few years, and then I sort of put it aside and said, you know, I really don't know how to do this. I was just too beholden to the life, and I felt as though I couldn't change anything. Whereas now I don't have that issue.
No. And yet it did become, you know, a very good movie.
Beautiful movie. I think, you know, Tommy Murphy, who is from a different generation from Tim, and he found a way into it, into the material, which I couldn't ever find.
I have to ask you too, at the end, you know, this term showrunner, which seems like a sort of fairly recent term. Is it a American term that we're sort of using more and more in Australian film and TV? And what does a showrunner...
Showrunner is an American term. really for writer producer, and I guess it kind of evolved around the time of you know, the sort of premium cable television like the HBO TV, and it was basically having one vision of a TV show, that a creative vision that took the show from script stage to completion, and that's the idea, because it's not normally what happens, say in a feature film, the director has that role and the director works with the producer to, but it's the director who runs the creative from beginning to the end. On television, directors come and they go traditionally, you know, because of the length of the series, and so there isn't a single unifying creative vision, and so the role of the showrunner evolved so that there was someone who could oversee the whole thing, and so that's loosely what I have done on shows like The Slap and on Nowhere Boys, and these days now, because I sort of work across a whole bunch of different shows, I work with, say, Louise Fox on Glitch, for instance. She'll be the showrunner on the show, and I'm an executive producer on it.
And is that a role that sort of suits your personality and style, do you think?
I really like doing it, yeah. I like doing it when I've got the time to do it.
Yeah. And just finally then, I don't know if I can ask, but what projects you're working on now, or if it, things under wraps?
There are some things under wraps and some things not. There's a whole bunch of things. We've got Seven Types of Ambiguity, another book adaptation, a wonderful novel by Elliot Perlman, which goes to air next April, or next year sometime. And then we have the second series of Wanted, which is our show for Channel 7 with Rebecca Gibney, which I'm executive producing. Second series of The Family Law, which is also a book adaptation, with Benjamin Law, and that goes into production any second now. And the second series of Glitch, which is the supernatural show, which I kind of co-created with Louise Fox. And then the third series coming soon of the kids show, Nowhere Boys, which sort of won an Emmy last year and has been sort of spectacular success all around the world. And that's being finished right now and goes to air soon. So those things I can talk about, and then there's a bunch of things I can't talk about.
Yeah. Well, considering such a busy life and such a creative life, thank you very much, Tony, for spending time with us today. Thank you.
Pleasure. Great to meet you.